Thanks for listening to the Bootleg Avocado Podcast, where we dive into all things at the intersection of food, beverage, cannabis, and psychedelics. In this episode, we take you to South by Southwest. We were lucky enough to be part of this year's Future Food Track, in which we moderated the panel on Cannabis, the Catalyst for New Food Culture. Special thanks to our panelists, Lori Rosen, founder and president of Rosen Group PR, Ben Richardson, director of research at 730 Capital, Ben Larson, CEO of Virtosa, and Chad Rosen, founder of Victory Hemp Foods. My name is Mario Rodriguez, and I'm your host. You can check us out at bootlegavocado.com to find out our upcoming events, and we're also available on all your favorite social media platforms. Thanks for listening. Welcome, everyone. We are excited to kick things off today at South by Southwest. We are here and very grateful to have been approached by the organization to help curate a very timely panel around the emerging cannabis industry and how it's helping to shape the future of food. This is Cannabis, the Catalyst for New Food Culture. So with COVID-19 pandemic happening, this has actually exposed the epidemic of mental health issues in the US and the need to bring wellness to the forefront. The need for plant-based solutions to deal with these extreme shifts and finding ways of recovery is imminent. So we're here to shed the light on the impactful landscape of cannabis as it emerges into the food community. Debunking the stigmas and uncovering the innovation that has been happening in the food and beverage space. So how do we earn trust from the food community? How has the cannabis industry, coming from decades of oppression, social inequity, and culture, fit into the future of food? So this amazing panel has been brought together to highlight the innovative pillars in hemp manufacturing, F&B product development, investing, and public relations. I want to give a huge thank you to all these panelists, Lori Rosen from Rosen Group PR, Ben Larson from Virtosa, Chad Rosen from Victory Hemp Foods, and Ben Richardson from 730 Capital. Welcome, everyone. My name is Mario Rodriguez. I am moderator for today and owner of Bootleg Avocado. With Bootleg, we were created in order to help and support early stage plant-based startups in the culinary operations space. This encompasses not just food, now merging into cannabis and psychedelics as well. Through our event series, we help to really showcase the voices, the innovators and founders at the intersection of food, beverage, and cannabis and psychedelics. So this is kind of why we put together this amazing crew. We've had over 80 panelists in the past, and you can actually check out some of our events at bootlegavocado.com. So I come from national food space as a chef, have worked in kind of the fine dining world. And for us, you know, refinement of food has always been, you know, paramount. And what's happening in the cannabis industry is the refinement of the edibles, refinement of the infusions, and even beverage has taken an uptick in sophistication, palate flavors, when we talk about terpenes as well. It all kind of really encompasses all those great elements of what makes food exciting. So that's why this is such a great, important conversation to have. So let's kick things off with our first panelist. So first to stage is going to be Lori Rosen from Rosen Group PR.
Hi,
hey, Lori. How are you doing today?
Good.
Thank you so much for being a part of this. Let me just make sure that we are spotlighting you properly here. Let's see here. Here we go. All right. So Lori, thanks again for being a part of this. You come from the PR world with decades of experience, not just in DC, but in New York City.
Right.
So give us a little background on just on you and also how PR has changed over those decades.
Well, I'll take the whole hour on that, because when I first started in this business, we were literally typing up and mailing pitch letters, still to today. Mm-hmm. And then we were calling the media and they were actually picking up. So we would court the reporters and we'd schmooze a little bit. We'd book an interview, we'd get our story, everybody's happy. Obviously that's changed over the years. And you know, with the proliferation of news outlets and podcasts and Twitter feeds, and now the return of email newsletters, all of a sudden every day, somebody's, you know, new is doing an email newsletter. The challenge is how to stand out and how to resonate. And, you know, that's always, that also is an opportunity. For instance, back in the day, you got an interview or a feature story in the Detroit Free Press. It stayed in Detroit, it lived in Detroit, and then it died in Detroit. Today, you get an interview at a regional newspaper, and then you take that article or that piece and link it across your social channels and promote it on your website and send it to your stakeholders and try to get it aggregated in other news outlets. So there are a lot of good opportunities to take any kind of media, whether it's small, medium, or large, you know, you want the large ones, and you know, make it resonate. So if you're it's not just getting the article, it's really like across all the channels and leveraging it up the kazoo.
What about, I guess, where has it shifted as far as the struggles of communicating? Are there channels that have changed over time? Is fake news a thing? Like, where are the struggles here of communication in general?
I mean, I look at, like, there are struggles. We don't really, let's say, pay attention to fake news, or else that would be a whole nother area of non-productivity. You know, what we do with all of our clients is find the unique story. So, like with, you know, with Juana, for instance, was the former insurance executive who came over to cannabis with no experience, but who had experience back then because it was a new industry. And then, oh, she's a woman. So let's now create the woman and weed narrative and keep pushing that. You know, with our Azuka clients, it's a chef from New York City who runs a very popular Manhattan restaurant.
Bubby's. I love it.
Let's take his story and say the culinary skills are transferable to cannabis technology and you know, creating products, as it were. Mm-hmm. So it's first finding that unique story.
Yeah.
Then covering it and then sort of blowing it out.
Got it. And then what's kind of been the most effective methods of this exposure and everything else? What has been, especially, you know, with Azuka and Juan, you kind of covered that, but what about the other clients in that realm?
Well, what we're finding more recently is the leveraging of the articles, because an article alone is just not enough. You have to post it on your LinkedIn and then get up, you know, you have to sort of keep that 360 degree thing, communication thing going. And it works. I mean, when you hear from a client that an investor is, you know, saw an article or saw a post and is now going to, like, that's music, you know, that's like the best thing ever, or what, you know. So, you know, with PR, the age old question is what works, how do you measure it? How do you measure ROI? Mm-hmm. In the cannabis industry, you kind of can, like, you do have that excitement to measure it a little bit more than other products or other clients.
And what about representing just cannabis companies in general? How has your traditional strategies changed or kind of shifted as you kind of really target more of those cannabis newcomers?
I mean, representing this industry, the cannabis industry, it's such a dynamic, changing, fast-growing industry, and it attracts so many people. It kind of jump-started our business. I mean, I've been in business for over 30 years. So yeah. All of a sudden we have a whole new industry to learn. It's infused a ton of talent and excitement. You know, it's I'm learning each day too, which is a good thing.
Right.
And so it forces you to learn a new industry and the regulations. And then you kind of parallel path, understand which media are covering cannabis, which are going to cover cannabis, you know, sort of anticipate. Mm-hmm. Like when we first pitched the food reporter at the at the Wall Street Journal for a story in, you know, culinary cannabis. You know, he said, Lori, like, we're a national magazine or a national newspaper. Cannabis isn't legal. Do you think we're going to cover your story? So, okay. Now, guess what? The Wall Street Journal is covering cannabis, you know, CBD and cannabis, but it takes a little bit of time. Now it's going to, with all the new green states and legalization, it's going to change again. And there's going to be a whole nother area of outlets to, you know, to go for. But you have to, you know, you have to sort of anticipate that and figure it out.
That's great.
In my opinion, we're just at the very beginning. Like, this is as explosive as it is. Mm-hmm. It's just the beginning.
So what facets of the food industry have you targeted as of late? And, you know, where you kind of see the shifts in a post-COVID world when things open up and, you know, more states become legal and hopefully eventually the FDA will step in. And we're going to talk about that later on in the group discussion. But what are your thoughts on that?
Well, with Ben's company, for instance, the intersection with beverages is huge. And so that's like food and cannabis combined. We're working with a new coffee brand now, and that launched during the pandemic, during COVID, which of course has its own set of challenges. But afterwards, like now they're poised and they're, you know, laying the groundwork at the retail end. It's going, in my mind, going to explode again. Like the food industry, you've seen such a proliferation of food publications, culinary, and, you know, interest. The New York Times is putting a ton of its own marketing muscle behind their food apps and their food webinars and their food events. That's just one example. The, you know, Graydon Carter's airmail that comes, like high-end newsletter, all of a sudden he's covering food. Mm-hmm. So those are just like, which came first, the interest from the millennials or the interest from the media? You know, like it's intersecting and it's interesting to see. So, and now cannabis will be included too. So, and it is, you know, more and more. So I think post-COVID, we're in for the gold, green, and every other rush. Like it's going to explode because we're all pent up, not going out. You know, I know that ghost kitchens are a huge area of growth, but I think that we're all going to be eating more and buying more and being more, like it's going to be another wave.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to talk innovation with Ben Larson in a second. So thanks, Lori. We'll bring you back on the group discussion.
Okay.
So next we have Ben Richardson from 730 Capital.
Yes, thanks for having me.
Hey, Ben. Thanks so much for being a part of this. We met in New York. We had that New York connection. I know a lot of things are bubbling up in New York with legalization on kind of the buzz happening in the background and hopefully in the future. Indeed. Jersey's legal. You're taking this from the investment side of things. So, you know, walk us through, you know, the nuances in investing into cannabis or cannabis derived businesses.
Sure. So I'm Ben Richardson. I work with 730 Capital, and we're a cannabis merchant bank founded in 2018. So we've been at it about 2 years here. I invested in about 10 companies throughout cannabis and hemp. We have an asset management side of the business and an investment banking side of the business that helps companies raise capital. So we have an ancillary fund, and like many of the other funds, we're making that transition over to plant touching later this year, which is super exciting with our second fund. A kind of breakdown how we look at the industry, but we try to see it in sort of four quadrants, right? You have the rec side, the adult use side, which for my purposes, I would include medical programs that you see currently in these states.
Yep.
In part because when adult use really takes over, medical programs tend to dwindle. The second category would be wellness, right? And that's I think that's the area of awakening here in cannabis, you know, psychedelics, the whole bit. It's the terpenes, the flavonoids, and the range of cannabinoids in the plant that are yet untapped and not fully researched. And that's the exciting stuff about this, right? We know that essential oils have been there forever, but this I'd say is sort of a renaissance kind of a new push into food and beverage. I'd even put food and beverage in that wellness category
when it
comes to products in like CBD.
Yeah.
It's sort of like a nutraceutical supply chain.
Right. And I love that strategy of, you know, leaning towards, look, we're a wellness product, a wellness company versus like we're a cannabis company. There's always kind of that stigma that comes by like, you know, you guys just sell weed. No, it's not. We are really working through the product development side of things and supplying our end consumer with alternatives for medical use and all the things that, you know, people are kind of used to. So.
Yes. The third area would be medical, like proper FDA,
mm-hmm.
We have Epidiolex, which is, you know, the major, that's a huge market and probably longer cycled.
Yep.
And the other is industrial, which is again, longer cycled. We know there's hempcrete, all these industrial applications.
Yeah, some really cool stuff.
Pulp and paper. So when you talk cannabis, it's more than hemp. It's more than THC. It's more than CBD. It's kind of a world of products, with a world of opportunity for formulation and all else.
Amazing. So how have you kind of seen the landscape of these, you know, change as these new states come online? Have you kind of reshaped your focus on where to invest? Is it more tech? Is it more CPG innovation, payment solutions, et cetera?
Yeah. So now we're at, you know, what did we do in sales this year? $17.6 billion, according to BDSA. We're going to double and then grow again by 50% by 2026. Mm. So that's what we're preparing for, right? It's kind of thinking of it in simple terms.
Mm-hmm.
And we're clocking for about $41 billion by 2026.
Yeah.
So the market is undergoing tremendous growth. But it's sort of kneecapped by federal policy,
yeah.
Right? We've got the FDA issues, but the bigger issues of fundamental banking access and access to institutional capital.
Mm-hmm.
So we've really seen a difficult period here where we have an already existing market, right? Cannabis already exists here in New York and elsewhere,
yeah.
That you're trying to displace,
right?
And in doing this, you've got tax burdens, you've got all of these things that sort of challenge you as you try to grow a business. So it's been exceptionally difficult. This is an exceptionally undercapitalized space. I think anybody on the call who's been out there raising money can speak to that.
Yeah.
But now, this year, we're now at 16. States with adult use, right? That's including Virginia that passed, that'll come on in 2024. I'd estimate that six more will come on this year. It could be five, it could be six, right? And that puts us over that, 50% Senate threshold. And that matters for passage of this. So the expectation is that at least state level, states' rights assertions will come in 2022, that will lead to what's equivalent to federal legalization, and better access to capital. In all of this, we've seen tremendous growth, 45% growth year over year,
mm-hmm.
For cannabis. We gained $5 billion in 2020 under COVID, and in that you saw a tremendous development of touchless delivery, all of these platforms that before had probably struggled to gain traction are now growing at a tremendous rate. And that's really the excitement coming out of this. It's, we're the states need money, right? Mm-hmm. Where we all are in serious deficit.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the opportunity going forward to see these things, policies sort of liberalized and see things move forward.
Let's talk about a little bit about like the social equity piece of things, as far as investing into more minority found businesses and startups.
Sure.
Where is kind of that focus been with y'all, but also just kind of in the industry, just in general, to really push for, you know, not just, you know, capital, but licensing and everything else?
Sure. I think that's the vision, right? Is that this industry that you get to us, who gets an industry the size of beer,
right?
This is the size of beer, and you can make it any way you want. So how are you going to make it fair, and how are you going to make it equitable, right? And you look at the, you know, since I graduated high school in 1995, 18 million people have been arrested for this. 18 million. So you think, how are we gonna, you know, how did that affect them? You know, at, you know, $1,000 a pop, that's 18 billion, mm-hmm. right? So this has been a tax on our communities. Mm-hmm. So the need to really kind of make this up to those communities is there. And the fortunate, you know, part of this is that, you know, the corporations, that are sort of starting up are putting that social equity component, building that in to their portfolio as an essential part of conducting business. And I think it's a good start, but as capital becomes more available, mm-hmm. It's essential to establish diversity at all levels of the supply chain, executive on down. Right. And we're here to, you know, to guarantee that happens as the check writers.
I love that. So this is a great segue into, you know, where you kind of see the biggest gaps for these founders and support systems and incubators and also like collaborative efforts across the industry.
Sure. So first, clearly that we need banking access.
Yeah.
Right. And we need banking access, not just so you can, you know, take your dispensary's cash and, you know, place it in a bank account, right, and stay safe, as we've, you know, seen this epidemic of robberies in California and all else. But the institutions also need to be able to contribute to grow this industry.
Right.
Right. So I'd say that the essential business designation was probably a big start in 2020 of pushing this over the line. The industry has a long way to mature, and it cannot be that me in a venture capital seat needs to see a company with $10,000 of revenue a month to even take a look. Mm-hmm. Right? Because the best ideas in cannabis, I'll tell you, are in somebody's head, sitting in their apartment, you know, somewhere in this country.
Right.
And that really, you know, necessitates that we develop, the system of incubators, accelerators, and they're out there.
Yeah.
They're growing, changing, and morphing. But that really requires that access to institutional capital and support of both state and federal government.
Amazing. And also the use of great mentors as well within the community. So it's that access to people, you know, people like yourself, everyone on the panel, you know, would be amazing mentor to each of these new founders coming through. Great, Ben. So thanks so much for that. Let's switch gears and let's next bring on Ben Larson from Virtosa. Let me actually put you up. Hey, Ben, how are you?
Hey, Mario, how are you doing?
Great. Like I mentioned earlier, I feel like I'm part of the Virtosa family. We've done events in the past. Austin is amazing. Evelyn, everyone has just been so, so great to work with. And, you know, I kind of feel like you guys have done a great job of building a community within your organization that is very beverage focused, very product development focused, and that food tech side of things, if you will. So take us a little bit of background, Virtosa, and why beverage?
Yeah, I appreciate that. Really great to be here. And just kind of building off what you and Ben were just talking about, it's all about the community, right? And providing that level of support. You know, Austin, myself, Harold, we actually all met pre-Virtosa, like in the incubator world. You know, I had launched a startup incubator in the Bay Area called Gateway. I was fully focused on the cannabis industry and kind of creating an ecosystem that was about the rising tide and not siloing knowledge. And you know, long story short, that led us into creating Virtosa, where we saw that there was an opportunity to infuse the entire supply chain with better technology to create products, to bring better products to market faster. And so, you know, democratizing the technology that we're creating, and then working directly with companies to, you know, create products that speak to consumers. You know, again, kind of like speaking to what you guys were talking about, cannabis can live in many different realms, right? Health and wellness, pet care, athletics, you know, places you never even expected it. And I think that is inherently the big opportunity. And so, you know, you mentioned beverage. Everyone loves beverage. Like, you drink coffee, you have water, like your entire life is largely built around beverage. But also food, you know, like what social gathering do you not go to where you're all gathering around wherever the food is? You know, you go to Christmas, Thanksgiving, everyone's in the kitchen. And so at the end of the day, food should be functional. And the more experience that you can build around food, the better, right? And so it's like you're adding, what cannabis does is it gives you an opportunity to add a new dynamic to the experience of consuming food and beverage, right? Mm-hmm. And so as a company, Virtosa, we just focus on trying to empower these products to provide that. And so how do we do that? Make it faster acting, right? So you have a more dynamic experience so that you're not eating a gummy and then, you know, waiting for an hour and a half for the experience to kick in and like hoping that you guessed right when you did it. No, it's like you want to be able to consume something and start to feel those sensations as you consume it. And we've done really exciting products. Like, beverage is great from a biological standpoint. You know, it provides rapid absorption because you have the soft tissues in the mouth and you can get the droplets to kind of like get into the bloodstream faster. You know, it's broken down a lot easier in the digestive tract. So you're able to titrate your experience a lot more and have that kind of, you know, what a lot of people correlate to the alcohol experience, right? Mm-hmm. But cannabis is so much more dynamic because based on the cannabinoid profile, the terpene profile, you can really tune in what that experience is like. And, you know, it's very forward thinking for a lot of people. You know, a lot of people that are kind of newer to cannabis are like, what is he talking about? And it's like, yes, I went to weed college. You know, it's, I didn't. The exciting thing is beverage was a great kind of beachhead for us because technically it was difficult. Because you're taking a very viscous oil extracted from the plant, dispersing it in water and trying to get it to stay there, right? And it's like the most complicated salad dressing you've ever made. Right. But we've done it. And what that has then given us the option to do is, you know, explore other fast-acting form factors. And so, you know, we worked with Humphrey Slocum here in the Bay Area to create a terpene and CBD-infused ice cream. And because of the rapid onset and bioavailability, and what people don't know about terpenes is that it actually creates a very noticeable experience. And it was actually quite exciting. You know, there's all these articles, and it might've actually gotten them in trouble, but there's all these articles that came out. It's like a true adult ice cream,
right?
You know, without THC, without alcohol, like you're having like this like elevated experience. And, you know, it's still early on. Like, anyone on this call knows how early on it is for the cannabis and hemp industry. But like, when we see stuff like that, we know what the future looks like. And it adds a new sensory dynamic to food and beverage, which is, I don't know, I'm going to pull a random statistic out of my butt, but it's like, you know, 38% of our lives is built around food and beverage, right? It's like, yeah. 38% of statistics are made up on the spot. But, you know, I don't know. That's our perspective. That's why we're doing what we're doing. We're fully focused on creating the best ingredients we can for infused products. We're super excited about beverage because, I don't know, one of my favorite books of all time is The History of the World in Six Glasses. And it talks about the evolution of human culture around beverages, whether it's tea, wine, beer, spirits, soda. I think cannabis could be the seventh glass. Mm-hmm. And we're well on our way. If we look at how much money is like waiting or going into the cannabis space just to like help build out beverage, like there's definitely going to be a future there.
I think that should be the title of your next book, The Seventh Glass.
It already is. It's in the works.
Yeah. So let's talk about kind of, I love that you take a quote unquote experience first approach to curating your products to your clients. how do you control and elevate that experience? And also, how do you take those curated products and make them scalable?
Great question. So the how can take many different forms. So the how do we approach the conversation to ensure that that's the end goal is, it actually comes from like my startup background, right? Mm-hmm. The first time we meet with business owners, like our goal is to help you create a long lasting product. So I take great offense to anyone that's trying to fairy dust their product lines and like simply just get something because it has CBD or THC in it. Right. Like that isn't a long lasting sticky product. What we want to ask is like, who are you trying to talk to? What are you trying to deliver to them? What is the promise? What is the differentiated experience? Like, what are the talking points that you care about? And so, you know, from that standpoint, the flexibility that we give people with the products that we design is like, you know, the inputs matter. Like, what cannabinoids and terpenes are you using? What carrier oils are you using? Do you care about allergens? Like, what kind of emulsifiers are you using? Do you want all plant derived? Should it be certified organic? You know, it's like when you ask this level of questions, you get people thinking about their companies a lot more. Mm-hmm. And if you get everyone at that level of thinking, like really investing into the product throughout, then like you have an opportunity to really build some awesome like customer loyalty, right? Mm-hmm. So there's that aspect. The actual technical how we do it, because we've been so focused on the science and we, you know, we don't have our own brands. We're just here to help empower other brands. Like we get to focus all of our energy on a very narrow technology, right? Like we don't extract, you know, we don't grow and we don't create end products. So we're literally just here in the middle. We're like, here, let us make this special ingredient as good and repeatable and scalable as possible. Right. And so we invest all of our R&D into making it better and better every day and making it more scalable. So, you know, we can produce these ingredients at a scale that no individual company should be doing on their own.
And what about, you know, now that, you know, there's definitely a lot of people jumping into the beverage space in this realm, where do you kind of see, you know, where's the next, you know, what's the race going to be within the beverage side that's really focused and a lot more intricate and people are really rushing to at this point?
It's a great question, right? And I know we have, so cannabis is hemp. Hemp is cannabis. Like, I think we all need to have that discussion.
Yep.
At the end of the day, it's different combinations of cannabinoids and terpenes and flavonoids. But because of the federal government, they're divided into two very distinct categories, right? And because of that, actually, they're two very different markets. I think on the hemp side of the business, you have an entire category that is still searching for product market fit. Mm-hmm. Not just one company, the entire category. And so you see everything from alcohol analogs to health and wellness to nutraceuticals. And I don't think anyone can confidently go out there and say, this is the application for CBD or hemp, right? Well, maybe Chad can. We'll hear from him later. but like, contrary to that, on the cannabis side, I think it's very clear about what a lot of the applications are because it's a much more recognizable experience. Right. And so there's two very different drivers that are driving those markets. And so on the hemp side, I believe we will see CBD very much living alongside other active ingredients to create true nutraceutical applications or health and wellness applications. Mm-hmm. On the cannabis side of the business, you know, I think there's an opportunity. It's just this because it's the nascency of the category. Like literally when the regulations in California were written, beverage wasn't even on the radar. Like we're literally lobbying right now to make it so that we don't have to like, you know, have opaque bottles.
Yeah.
Because I think we all know that seeing the liquid doesn't make you want to get any more or less high. Right. You know, so like, it's just a stupid rule. So like coming to that realization that like you have this market that's very nascent, but you have all these different approaches you can take. So you can build a brand around replacing alcohol and making it social and trying to, design the cannabinoids and terpenes to create that experience. At the same time, you know, you can go after a different demographic, do a beautiful, like, light infused wine and, you know, serve a different experience. And so I think there's a lot of opportunity there. And like I said, it comes down to experience, right? And we're talking about designing experiences, and that's really fun. I think we're in this, again, interesting period where people are still focused on THC milligram count, right? And so we see this interesting trend where there's a lot of excitement around low dose sessionable experiences, but still a very high purchase pattern on like the 100 milligram shots, right? Mm-hmm. And so it comes down to access. A new consumer that's looking for a low dose beverage, you know, they're attuned to like clicking three buttons on their phone and getting something delivered to them. And that's hard to provide in the cannabis industry today. Right. So that will evolve over time. It's an exciting category. I just think there's a lot to be done on the supply chain to fulfill the true consumer experience.
Right. Well, thanks, Ben, for the insight on the beverage side of things. We'll bring you back on the discussion side. Just give me one second. All right. So next we have Chad Rosen, founder of Victory Hemp Foods. Chad, so much. Thanks so much for being part of this. We had an amazing panel that we put together all on hemp last year. We had Richard Rose. We had a ton of people in the hemp side of things. And, you know, from your realm, it's just an interesting part of which how you've actually, you know, jumped into the hemp seed production side of things and how you're influencing the next level of plant-based products that are being released out into the world. So give us a little bit of background just on you and also Victory Hemp Farms and like, you know, where you kind of see the value in what you're bringing to the hemp industry.
Sure. Yeah. It's great to be with you again, Mario. I've always wanted to go to South by Southwest. I guess I still want to go.
Yeah, we all do.
Still stuck here in Kentucky.
Next year, we'll do it.
All right, next year, you promised. So I appreciate you giving us an audience, and it's really fun to be here on the panel with the other panelists. I think we do something. We focus on the hemp seed, right? So and as Ben mentioned, it's all cannabis, right? It's all cannabis sativa. And we are developing and driving value from the hemp seed. So we look at it as an oil seed. Anything that comes from the cannabis plant, any of those seeds are oil seeds. And so what we do at Victory Hemp Foods is we fractionate them into oil and protein. And we do it in a way that doesn't use harmful chemicals or anything. And we deliver formulators products that ingredients that allow them to delight their customers, which, so I was listening to Ben and I feel like, you know, we have a lot of overlap and similarities in our passion for making our customers really successful. And it's a really exciting time to be in this space. The plant-based protein world is absolutely exploding and there's a real need for it, right? There's a big bullseye on the $7 trillion meat market. And our population is going to go to 9.5 billion people by 2050. And meat consumption is supposed to go up by 50%. And there's just no physical way that we can expand our animal production to meet the appetite, the literal appetite of consumers is more medium and low income communities have access to lower and cheaper food. So we're focusing on this big market, you know, $1.5 billion poured into meat and dairy analog proteins last year. So there's there's an ecosystem and a community that's leaning in to develop alternative products. Like you've heard of the Beyond Meats and the Impossible Foods and the Daya and hundreds of others. And we look at ourselves as having a little bit of the intel inside because hemp seeds and hemp protein are so tremendous in their formulative characteristics. So what we did at Victory Hemp Foods was we developed a process by which we could increase the functionality of the protein to fit into a variety of categories. And, you know, while, you know, you asked me a little bit about myself, you know, I'm originally from Southern California. I've kind of bounced around all over the country. And I was watching the 2014 Farm Bill pass through Congress. And there was this little section 7606 in there that was said, you know, if you want to be a farmer or a processor, you can work with hemp as far as the Department of Agriculture is approves it for anything with less than 0.3% THC, as long as your state abides by those rules. And so I saw a couple states adopt that legislation. I saw the Farm Bill pass, and I said, wow, this is a really exciting time to usher in a crop that has so much potential. Ben talked about, Ben Richardson talked about a few of the virtues of hemp, but you know, we all remember, we're all parrots of the popular science magazine calling out 25,000 different uses for industrial hemp. And a lot of those are pretty darn exciting and interesting and realistic. Not all of them, of course, but a lot of them. And so I said, my goodness, if we could bring this crop into the rotation, we could have the potential for to introduce a new commodity crop into the rotation. And this Farm Bill is paving that opportunity. So I moved from Southern California to a little town with 800 people in 5 Baptist churches to figure out what the pain points were of farmers, figure out what we were going to do to bring this crop into the rotation. I started selling the products at farmers markets and doing hand-to-hand combat with consumers to see what they liked, what they didn't like about the products. I learned that they really liked the hemp parts, but they really did not like the hemp protein powder. And that was kind of the aha moment of, we got to make this protein a lot better.
So what's kind of your vision to innovate on the food side of things? How have you kind of built that framework in order to do so, in order to really influence the new products that are coming out there?
I think that, you know, a lot of what we do is we talk about the nutritional aspects of hemp, which have always been there. I think that nutritionists have lauded hemp. They've always, the hemp protein and the hemp oils, all 9 essential amino acids, highly digestible proteins, essential fatty acids, and a number of smaller constituents that are really good for human health and nutrition. Nutritionists have always identified and supported those claims, and the market has always been pretty interested in understanding of the benefits of the hemp seed from a nutritional aspect. And that's been going on for a few decades now. But the challenge has always been the format that formulators are able to use to create finished good products, right? We eat, and the question for us was, how many hemp parts can we sprinkle on a salad or put in a smoothie? The scale is really going to come if we develop ingredients that formulators can use to create products like hamburgers with hemp protein. We consume an enormous amount of burgers in the United States, right? And the opportunity is to really create a format that fits right into the formulations and that formulators need to mimic those meat proteins, to mimic those dairy proteins and the other plant and the other other meat animal protein analogs.
And take us through a little bit more about like the product life cycle of hemp. You know, how have you supplied, you know, those CPG brands with the product? What makes it easy for them to, one, digest everything, you know, quote unquote, but also really help to amplify their product at the end of the day?
You know, I think the market's doing a lot of that itself. As a B2B food ingredient manufacturer, you know, we focus on doing what we do best and then supporting the formulators with application development. Mm-hmm. But certainly we don't have an extensive division that's working on application development. We really rely heavily on formulators to be able to do that. So we work with flavor houses, we work with CPG food manufacturers that have formulative divisions. They're all looking for the next best ingredients to help them solve the challenges and the needs of the market. And so how it kind of works is the marketers listen to the consumers, and the consumers tell them, we're looking for a product that isn't going to get me sick. So something that doesn't, you know, isn't allergen, that is coming from a supply chain that I can feel really good at about. And that usually involves removing the animal out of the equation in our case, and it has to taste good, right? And so formulators are on this hunt for these products. A lot of cases, marketers are saying, look, you can't use soy because so many oncologists are telling their customers that there's problems with soy proteins if you've had cancers. And so the formulator's shelf of products, toolbox of solutions is just narrower and narrower and narrower. And so they're always looking for more and more products that they can help. They're always on the search for products that they can use to help them achieve and solve those problems. And so we get a lot of calls from formulators. We spend an enormous amount of time writing blogs about how our ingredients work into other products, what the formulative characteristics are, what the nutritional aspects are, and those get picked up by the formulators, and we get them samples, and they kind of run with it from there.
Mm-hmm. How have you, you know, obviously there's struggles in kind of the growing, the processing, distribution end. Have you adopted any ag tech solutions out there? Have you been able to kind of overcome those struggles in that, those realms?
I think, you know, it's a little bit of like boiling the ocean, right? It's really difficult to do. You only have so much time in the day. So we use applied technology. There's folks that are doing some amazing stuff in ag tech and helping on the agronomy side of things. Yeah. What we focus most of our energy on is developing processes by which we can extract the most value and make them the most functional for those formulators. So we're taking the hemp seed and we're delivering formats of concentrated proteins, texturized proteins, soluble proteins, fractionating the oil into its omega-3s and its omega-6s to make that, to extend shelf life, so to lend it better to spreads and vegetable margarines, et cetera. So, so that's kind of where we focus. And on the agronomy side of things, there are really some big gaps in the genetic side of things and getting this to be a commercial crop. One of the big challenges that the supply chain faces is having a raw material cost perspective that is equal to or can compete head on with some of our other commodity crops, like the canolas and the soys. And hemp seeds are extremely expensive if you put them in perspective with those other crops. So getting the economics right is really a factor of making sure that we have crops that are commercially viable for farmers to grow on large scale agriculture plots. So you have to make sure that your germination is good, your emergence is good, having the right support for our farmers to make sure they're planting it in rows that are the right spacing at the right depth, the right timing, and then having a consistent genetic that's easily harvestable, and then having those farmers understand what the right nutrients are. Because for us, and you look at, you know, we fit into large scale agriculture. We grow 180 million acres of corn and soy in the U.S. And so that's kind of the pool that we're swimming in, is this large scale agriculture. We grew 100,000 acres of, well, we didn't, but Canada grew 100,000 acres of industrial hemp last year, close to, and we still think that that's just, I mean, it is, it's just a grain of sand on the beach of agriculture. So how do we scale that? Well, we scale that with really strong agronomy, genetic development, and we're doing our part at Victory by creating a market by changing the processing technology so that the market can absorb what we're producing on the supply chain side. So it's a really important part of the equation that we think we're tackling is developing formulations that work for the marketplace.
Amazing, Chad. Well, thanks so much on the inside of hemp seed production, how you guys are influenced the plant-based food space, which I think is amazing. You're actually hopefully in the future going to be supporting a lot of the clients that we have in the plant-based space. So I'm always kind of directing them over to you, and you have some great investors that we have, we're mutual friends with. So I appreciate that.
Thanks.
All right. So let's bring everyone together. Let's see here if I can do a gallery. Here we go. Awesome. So we got everyone together. So we're going to spend the next 10 minutes just kind of doing an open discussion on some of the points that you know, definitely touch within some of your realms, but obviously feel free to jump in wherever. The first thing we want to discuss is kind of how each of y'all are positioning yourselves for FDA compliance. What does that look like? What sort of frameworks are you putting in place now? That way it becomes easier. And then, you know, what are your steps there?
Yeah, happy to jump in here, especially working on the ingredient side. You know, we took the responsibility pretty seriously because, you know, we have hundreds of products that rely on us to be compliant with the FDA. And so as we march forward, you know, it's like we're doing as much as we can to kind of like get into that realm of what the FDA is willing to talk about, right? Because there have been hemp CBD extractors that have gone through the process of getting self-affirmed GRAS certified or generally regarded as safe. Mm-hmm. But getting that to the next step where you're getting evaluated by the FDA, no one's like really kind of broached that yet, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like there's this wall that everyone's getting up to. So for us as like an ingredient manufacturer, proving out the safety and doing the clinical studies to really show it's like, hey, we're doing as much as we can. We want to sit at the table. Like we want to make sure that we're being responsible, right? And I think that's the most important thing. And we've seen this evolution in a lot of products over even just the last year, right? It's like there are products on the shelves that are not testing to have the ingredients that they say they do on the label. Mm-hmm. And that's something that we as an industry have to fight against because we're trying to build trust with the regulators, with the consumers, and through efficacious products. That's what will lead us to like truly finding, you know, going back to what I was saying before, that product market fit for the category, because you have to have products that actually work first. And so, you know, that comes down to doing the blood work and the toxicology studies and all that kind of stuff. And it's expensive. And I think, I don't know, Ben can probably speak to this a little bit better, but that's the hard fact that a lot of capitalists have to face when investing in this industry. Is like, there's things that you need to invest in that don't typically make sense. Like in a, you know, I don't know, when I was investing in the tech world, right? It's like, you never want to invest in R&D because it's expensive. And it's like, you just want to invest in things that proven to work. But in the cannabis industry, everyone has to invest in the supply chain and the efficacy.
And I'll step in, but I think, you know, product formulation is a huge part of just building a brand, right? You build that trust in the consumer. They know the experience they're going to get every time. That's exceptionally difficult in formulating cannabis products, right? I think folks have been trying to build those brands and trying to build that product consistency, and Ben has surely helped many of them. And at the same time, dealing with the sort of FDA overhang and some uncertainty. So you see groups, extending into CBD with some risk, right? So I think the funds and other groups have been a bit reluctant to, overweight too much to straight CBD investment or go too heavily into hemp because you might get burned because you're uncertain of what might happen down the line. Mm-hmm. We see some companies, one of our portfolio companies, Weller, extended into a wellness product. So they are the top CBD beverage in the country, but now they're launching an elderberry wellness themed sparkling beverage that allows them to get into the into distribution, because you can't do that yet with CBD, right? And then they maintain that option to extend their CBD product down the line. So I think people are sort of finding their way in the dark here until the FDA gives some indication, and investors are being very careful with how they proceed.
Well, you guys are being kind, because the frustration overall is FDA's, you know, waffling and more questions. Like they approve and then all of a sudden chaos, and like you think that things are moving in the right direction, and then all new regulations are coming up. So like from our point of view, we feel like, you know, more of collective voice and lobbying, you know, lobbying, and everyone sort of on the same team to make sure that what the FDA does sort of sticks and doesn't continue to change and create new hurdles in this industry.
Just the PSA, and it wasn't all bad news for the cannabis space, because in proteins, oils, hearts, from hemp seeds, there's no petition from the FDA on fresh hemp foods GRAS statement. So manufacturers can utilize hemp protein oil and hearts across all of their products without any fear of reprisal from any regulation. So, you know, if you want to sprinkle a little hemp protein powder in your products, there's you have no problem with that. So we're seeing a lot of manufacturers who are marketing from their nutritional labels want to put hemp on the front of the package and on the nutritional label on the back, and buying our products and formulating with those, and not really sure whether the consumer is aware of it. I experienced that myself, where consumers pick up a bottle of hemp seed oil and they say, holy moly, I can get 8 ounces of hemp seed oil for $10. Wow. And they probably think it's something else, right? But and so I'm sure there's some marketers and some manufacturers that are pulling that card, but that's one of the great things about being in the hemp food industry is there really aren't any legal barriers or regulatory barriers for us to expand our market into the market.
What about focusing on, the improving the sustainability of cannabis in general, even hemp as well, and also kind of also contributing to kind of the circular economy of things? Because I know that a lot of the packaging that happens in kind of the edible side of things, it's all plastic, you know? How have you guys really focused on the sustainability of your product or your service or even communication in regards to this?
We don't have any finished products, but you know, like I was saying, we work with a lot of different companies. And so, similar to the FDA discussion, I just think it's important that there is this constant lobbying effort, right? And as entrepreneurs, you're always short on time, but this is just the cold hard facts of being in an emerging market. Like, you have to get involved with the conversation. And so, especially with the new legislative session, you know, getting involved with the organizations that are getting in front of the new assembly members, the new senators, and having those talks. And so, you know, beverage category in particular, it's like, you know, it's massively inefficient to have to paint bottles because it's required for opaque packaging. Like, not only does it double the cost of the packaging, but you're shipping bottles up to another state so it can be dipped and painted. And all of a sudden there's questions about how recyclable is a painted bottle. And like, it's just massively inefficient. So it adds costs, it adds like greenhouse gases, you know, what you name it. And like you mentioned, like the plastic component it's hard. It's a hard conversation because at the same time, it's those plastics that are enabling, you know, child resistant packaging, which, you know, keeping kids from getting high is important, right? but like when you take a can, sorry, I have props. but you have to insert like a plastic tab in the top. Like, what does that mean for the recyclability of this? And like, all of a sudden, all right, now I have packaging that might just end up in a landfill. And that's unfortunate, right? And I think pretty ubiquitous across the cannabis and hemp industries, people actually care about the plant and the earth, and they want to do right by the earth. So it's something that we have to overcome. And it's something that we just have to constantly be thinking about how do we do that? How do we achieve it still with, you know, safety of you know, the consumer, the children, whoever, but also for the earth, right? And so it's a hard conversation, but the best thing that people can do is get involved and come up with ideas, because like, we're all tasked with coming up with better ideas. The regulators certainly aren't going to do it. They're just going to respond to what they're hearing from the community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a cornerstone of the impact of our industry and why we really do what we do. You know, from a mission standpoint and an impact standpoint at Victory Hemp Foods, the idea is that we have the potential to introduce a new commodity crop into the rotation. Commodity crops are, you know, are crops in general are usually 1-2 punches. You have corn and soy and back and forth, and you can grow those crops in denuded soil that have been stripped of all nutrients. You can GMO them so that they're resistant to all sorts of chemicals that will snuff out life above and below ground. And I think that we have an opportunity in the cannabis space and the hemp space specifically to introduce a crop that can scale dramatically. They can solve a lot of the environmental challenges that we're facing today. And we can do it in a really healthy way because cannabis and hemp has the ability to grow without the need for a number of the herbicides and pesticides that are currently being used. And so it's really like, from a consumer perspective, what do you want to see in your products. The hemp plant is extraordinarily versatile. We're seeing hemp plastics that can be incorporated into a lot of the products and packaging issues that you're talking about. Hemp herd is being blended with all sorts of plastics to reduce the amount of plastic that is petroleum that's being used in plastics. But at the end of the day, the agriculture can be the biggest problem or solution to a lot of the problems we face in with regard to global warming, meaning that we can continue fertilizing with ammonia nitrate and synthetic fertilizers, or we can start to see a regenerative cropping system come into the rotation that's building organic soil matter, that's using cover crops, not leaving soil bare earth, and also limiting the amount of tillage that we're seeing in a lot of crops. And so through contracts that we're writing directly with farmers, we can leverage these goals and hopefully take advantage of opportunities to sequester carbon, which we're seeing the administration, the Biden administration, and Vilsack's, under Vilsack's USDA, develop policies that are going to start paying out for sequestration of carbon. So there's a great opportunity right now to using hemp, and you know, the more we can use hemp in our everyday needs, whether it's from feeding our bodies or creating the packaging that's carrying the foods that are feeding our bodies, clothing our bodies, building our homes, there is just tremendous potential to move towards eliminating a lot of the materials and ingredients that are having such a deleterious effect on humanity and the planet.
Amazing. So we have about 5 minutes left. I want to jump into two more quick questions, and then I want to make sure you guys have time for your final remarks. So for each of y'all, how have you guys measured success so far? You know, what are the kind of long-term strategies that you're implementing now that'll kind of give you that longevity that is needed in this industry? As y'all have said, is within its infancy right now. Anyone can kick that one off.
Sure. I think, you know, recognizing that you're in the first inning, you start thinking about, you know, how you're going to build your, you know, your ecosystem. And, you know, it's often the case that you just pick a, you know, in VC, you pick a good team, you know, a market you like, and you go. Mm-hmm. But here, it's, you know, in a heavily regulated industry, there's a little bit of self-help that you bake in. So you might pick a company that's adjacent another of your companies, and they can work together, and they seem like a good combination. So I think you're measuring success, in longer strokes than you might in some other industries. You're looking at gross market value, but it's gross market value of a federally illegal product that you can't take a percentage cut on. Right. So you're growing GMV with a trading operation or something like this. But you can't yet monetize it, but you know you can down the line, upon federal legalization. So it's a bit long-sighted, mm-hmm. And a recognition that you're in early innings and sort of building out your ecosystem with companies that sort of fit your mission.
Yeah. Where I'd add to that as far as measuring success, you know, for us and for me personally, it's about educating and access to the end consumer. You know, and that's why I take very seriously about, you know, educating people on products. You know, I listening to Chad talk about all the applications outside of like the, you know, outside of the active compounds that we focus on. I think that's a really important conversation, just as important as, you know, talking about how it, the certain compounds in the plant can lead to experiences, right? The challenge is those marketers that live somewhere in between and cause a lot of noise about like, oh, what is the application of the plant, right? Like overselling CBD when all a product has is hemp seed extract in it. Like that, it's inappropriate, right? And so leveraging our voices to make sure that the customers at the end of the day are educated and knowledgeable about the plant and really proliferating it. And so, you know, internal to our company, we just have this phrase that we use called infuse the world. And that comes down to infusing the world with not only the products, but because we actually do believe that hemp and cannabis does heal and that, that it could be a great replacement for a lot of other things out there. You know, being leaders in the space, like everyone that's in the space today is a leader. And so you have to act like leaders and you have to demand better and you have to push for more. And, you know, like Ben said, we're in the first inning. And so you have nine more or eight more innings, hopefully no overtime, of doing that. Right. And it's our responsibility to do that.
What about you, Lori?
Well, our measure is to work with quality clients. I mean, there's a lot, as I said, there's a gold rush mentality and there's a lot of people coming into this space and we get a lot of calls all the time, but we want to work with the people that are in it for the long haul or for the right reasons. Mm-hmm. The social equity piece is like, it's very gratifying to hear when people are in this business to help, you know, with the Last Prisoners Project and things like that. So, I mean, it's also, our success is also when my team gets excited and wants to join the cannabis team, like within our company, because it's, as I said, it's interesting and it's in the first inning. And yeah, so overall that would be sort of a measure of our success professionally.
What about you, Chad?
How do we measure success at Victory? No, I mean, the big mission is right. Like, is acreage. That's the biggest, you know, from my perspective is scaling acreage is a measure of success. But there's also a real danger in just in driving towards that ambition, because as I said, we have a real crossroads. Like, we can pick up a lot of the bad actor habits of the agriculture industry to create transgenic strains of hemp that resist Roundup. And I don't think that's what we're here to do. And so I'm gonna, like, Ben's got it, like, nailed it. Like, we are leaders. We have an opportunity to lead. This industry is driven by grassroots passion. That's why we got legislation passed. It wasn't big industry. They're lobbyists. I don't think anyone has any illusions. This was driven by a bunch of people that thought they could make the world a better place by driving legislative reform around hemp. And all of a sudden we did it. And we had 4 years later, now it's legal. And now we have the ABCDs for people in the agriculture space is the Archer Daniel Midland, Cargill, Bungie, Louis Dreyfus, who are on the outside looking in going, holy moly, this is going to be a commodity crop. I got to have a solution and an answer to this. And now, because we've developed some IP and we have some competitive moats and we say, you have to talk to us if you're going to, right? Like, now we're at the table with these global giants that we can say, hey, this is what we were thinking and how this industry is going to proliferate. Is it's going to listen to consumers. It's going to do it a little bit different. We're going to take, you know, resources that you have and ideas that you have, but we're not going to do some of those same things the same way. And so, acreage is a major measure of success, but doing it under a regenerative program, building organic matter, sequestering carbon, and delivering healthy foods to people so that they can live their best lives is hallmark to, is the big long asterisk to acreage.
Amazing chat.
Vice president. No,
yeah, right. I was going to vote for him. Come on.
Right.
Okay. So I want to give, so every one of our events, we give each panelist an opportunity to kind of say their final piece as far as anything in the industry, the hopes and wishes of the industry that you have of it. And then if I can also tack on one other request is, and if you can also give a little bit of kind of your golden rules or, you know, suggestion on how to really start off if you're trying to get into the cannabis industry. So two-parted question. I don't know who wants to start first, but it's a good opportunity for you to kind of say your piece and everything else.
I'll start.
All right.
I mean, golden rule has always been the same. It's terms of transparency and sort of doing the right thing for internal and external stakeholders. We all agree, like this, there is so much potential in this industry, and there's a, you know, more upside than not. So if we sort of stay on track and keep doing what we're doing and bringing our best practices from previous experiences to this, I think, you know, I think overall we're in good shape.
Yeah. Go ahead, Ben.
All right. So, I mean, clearly we're looking at one of the most disruptive products, right? Looking at the cannabis plant in general, to come along in generations, right? You look at all of the markets that this touches, you know, you're in excess of $2.5 billion, right? You think of sleep aids, you think of, you know, pain management. It sort of touches everything. So we're clearly holding an amazing opportunity. And, you know, you hope that that the market will really stick to its values and attract good people and good talent to the industry. So, you know, I'd encourage people to get out there, you know, look to your local hemp groups, look to your local cannabis groups. There are plenty of us out there. Any of us are willing to give, you know, information, tell you which meetings to go to, whether it's in, you know, New York City or in California. We're all around and easily accessible, on social or anything else. It's a great community. It's an ethical community. And, you know, it's exciting to build this with these folks and others.
Amazing. Thank you, Ben. Chad, you want to go next?
Yeah, sure. I think what I'd love to see in the industry is more mission aligned capital. There's such a great opportunity here, but entrepreneurs like us, we come out with a really great idea that is often built with the triple bottom line in mind. And if you find, you know, and as you build your business, you need more capital and more capital, especially to be at a scale that's going to have a real big impact. And so when you take capital, sometimes if you're not aligned with that capital, your mission can go astray. And so I would hope that to see and ask more and more mission aligned capital to understand what the potential is and what an inflection point a little capital can have in a space right now to help the hemp industry scale to meet the needs of humanity. I think that there is an extraordinary opportunity to make great returns, but that capital is going to have to be a little bit patient. And so, yeah, we're looking for mission aligned patient capital to help deliver the returns that we know are possible. And that is like, that isn't a pitch for victory. I see so many of my colleagues that are doing such amazing things with the plant and from everything from fiber and textiles to wovens and non-wovens and cars and of course food. And there's just so many great places where capital is desperately needed to make sure that we do this right. And so that's what I would ask and what I hope is happening. And if I could give anyone advice, maybe those other entrepreneurs that are out there that have great ideas about how it's going to be really, really just nail your fundamentals of your economics, right? Like that is a big part of not coming out or not being able to earn or deserve the capital that you need to build your business. Get those fundamentals down. Understand what your unit economics are. Understand what your yields, your throughputs, and your COGS are. And understand what you're going up against if you're trying to replace something else. Because at the end of the day, you have to be grounded in the reality of fundamental economics. And those don't necessarily all apply to dollar, how much money you can make or how big the market is, but also what your product can do and yeah, market potential. So those are some of the things that that I would encourage any other entrepreneur who wants to jump into the space to make sure they have a really strong grasp of.
Thanks so much, Chad. So Ben, take us home.
Yeah, I mean, I'll start by just seconding what Chad said, like you nailed it. I think I'll just extend it to, you mentioned mission-driven capital, right? And I think it is important that we also have mission-driven operators across the board. I think every industry, but especially hot, new, exciting industries are going to be attractive to opportunists. And frankly, there's no room for it for a number of reasons. From the perspective of the impact of the war on drugs and the communities impacted by that, and you know, social equity comes up in every conversation. I think some people just have become tuned to knowing that they have to mention it, but it has to be ingrained in what we do because you look at the disparities in this particular market, and it's really important that we address that from the root, that we build our companies to address it, that we build our ideals to address it, and that it's not just lip service. Because we see it. We see you if you are doing it, right? And you have to do it from a survival perspective. You know, you can't be an opportunist for a number of reasons. You have to understand the root of which this industry is built around, all the hard work that has been done to date, because it's a living, breathing like journey. And if you don't understand the history, you're gonna make a lot of missteps that aren't gonna be good for your business. Because like Chad said, I mean, the fundamentals, the running the business, what is the root of that? Because this industry is hard and there's a lot of inefficiencies. And if you don't have your fundamentals down, you're gonna run out of capital. And if you run out of capital, no one's gonna give you more. So it's a survival thing. It's for us, it's for you. We are gonna say the first inning again, right? I've been saying this since 2015 when I got in the industry. We have the opportunity to build this industry in the ideals that we see fit. And we need to do that and demand it, because I got to tell you, 6 years later, you know, there are those tendencies from the opportunists that come in. It's like, it's a lot of lip service and there's a lot of disparities that are starting to occur already. And we don't want to have to do what the tech industry and the other industries do and retroactively go fix things after decades of bad acting, right? We need to fix it now when we're creating our companies.
Awesome. Well said, Ben. I want to thank everyone for being here. To all the panelists, give yourselves a round of applause. It was the amount of knowledge and experience that you guys have. It's like you said, it's going to help to usher in the new generation of cannabis food enthusiasts and psychedelics enthusiasts all together. We're going to jump into the Q&A, but again, thank you again. I'm eternally thankful for this. We'll follow up with Q&A. And we'll take things from there. So thanks everyone for being here, Chad, Lori, Ben, and Ben. Thanks for everything, for your time today. So we'll continue with the Q&A.